This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us on this version of the show. I am broadcasting from a balmy 40-something degrees in Des Moines, Iowa. Wow. Last week it was 9 degrees, and over the weekend it's going to dip down to those single digits, so I feel very fortunate. I'm here speaking at the West Des Moines Chamber of Commerce. I'm excited about that. It's always good to spread the word and talk about the show and talk about dealing your own destiny. Speaking of dealing your own destiny, some good news finally from the Olympics. I felt like we needed to start with the Olympics because of how I've been dogging the Americans and how shocking it's been. But Lindsay Jacob Ellis won USA's first gold medal. And I have to say, it couldn't have come at a better time to a better person. This is somebody who we had on the show quite some time ago. She's 36, so she's the oldest snowboarder to medal at the Olympics, and she earned her second medal in 5 Olympics, and she did it. She said it feels incredible to be at this level and to secure that medal. So she got out to an early lead, and she never lost her advantage, and that's what the difference was. So good for Jacob Ellis. In her career, she has 30 World Cup victories, 10 X Games gold medals, and 6 World Championships. So bravo. Well done. Very psyched and proud of her. Shaun White and Chloe Kim, some more good news, qualified for the half pipe finals. I like to have finals. It's fun to watch some of the tricks and what they do. And both of them have a very good chance to medal. We'll see how that goes. It would be cool to see Shaun White do it. Again, an older athlete who's had an incredible career. And Chloe Kim has so much momentum behind her, too, because we're still way behind when it comes to medals. But some of the big events happening, coming up very soon, because we still have a lot of Olympics yet to go. So I'm optimistic, let's put it that way. All right, speaking of optimism, it's rare to hear this from Anthony Fauci. I mean, that's the truth, right? He constantly is asked about the pandemic, and he should be, because he's the top medical advisor in the United States. Some people like him, and some people can't stand Anthony Fauci, and he gets it, because that's the world we live in, right? He's either the villain or the hero. But he actually said that we're on the other side of this. He didn't quite say it in those words, but he said that decisions on coronavirus restrictions in the United States are going to be made on a local level. He said, as we get out of the full-blown pandemic phase of COVID-19, which we are certainly heading out of. So let me repeat that again. He said, as we get out of the full-blown pandemic phase of COVID-19, which we are certainly heading out of. And you can see that other countries are opening up. And in the United States, COVID cases declined 44% in the past week compared to the last 7 days. All that information I got from the Washington Post, because they have a really good tracker there looking at the hospitalizations and whatnot. So one can only hope, because in the meantime, you have New York, you have Illinois lifting mask mandates for indoor businesses, but in-school rules are, staying. And this is upending a lot of families who are really split on where they stand with masking at schools. This is an argument that's been raging probably for the last year. I don't think at the very beginning that was an issue, because most of the schools, nobody was at the schools. It was more virtual learning. Once we got a little bit deeper into the beginning of the pandemic, things really dramatically changed. But we're beyond that. And I think those local arguments are going to continue to get more heated, and it'll just depend from district to district, school-wise, and from state to state. It's going to vary. I mean, that's Fauci's basically saying, not basically, he is saying, hey, it's up to other people to decide, because we're coming out of this. They can decide which way they decide they're going to go. Right? Which way they decide they're going to go, period. All right, I'm going to say bravo to this, because I thought this was seriously invasive. And I just saw something on this, and somebody actually texted me, too, to make sure I was aware of it. But how about
the fact that you have now this reversal in how Americans verify their identities, right? When they're filing for unemployment or government benefits, there was a whole push for the face scan option. And then what does that do with sensitive information? Does it put your information at risk or not? I think it's invasive. Honestly, I know we have hackers and cyber attacks, and we talk about that all the time. In fact, my pal Matthew is going to come back from Vigi to talk about cybersecurity and some of what's happening in small businesses, etc. But the private contractor ID.me says it's going to drop that recognition requirement in the identity verification software used by 30 states and 10 federal agencies, which is a very, very big reversal because there's been backlash of privacy concerns right on. I think it is just too invasive. You know, the Internal Revenue Service said they're going to abandon their plan to require anyone seeking access to their tax records online to submit a video selfie. Are you kidding me? I want my tax records and I got a video selfie. You are ridiculous. No. And so this is a very, very good thing. The company's face scans have been run on millions, though, of Americans where they were looking for unemployment insurance, tax credits, pandemic assistance, grants, or any of that kind of stuff in California, Florida, New York, even Texas, as well as some of the other feds, you know, the agencies handling Social Security and Labor and Veteran Affairs. And I know that is a big thing with, in some cases, with the veterans. So it's right to question this. It's absolutely to question this technology. Too invasive. I'm all about no. I don't think this is how far we have to go. There are other ways to look at protecting identities, and to me that's just over the top. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's coming, it's down the pike. Well, it's not down the pike if, you know, there's controversy and enough people stand up and say, yeah, I'm not going to really do that. I don't want to participate in that. Why do I have to? Are you making me do that? Yeah, they were. They were making people do that, and they didn't want to do it. They felt uncomfortable doing it. So that is a very, very good thing. That's what I'm going to say. Okay, this is interesting, too, as I throw in chip away at a couple of things here right at the at the top. So you know how Brazil has that big landmark, the statue of Christ? Brazil is building a new giant Christ statue taller than Rio's, because it's Rio. It's in Rio where they have it. And I was looking at a sketch of it. It is ginormous. I mean, the planes are going to have to be careful that they don't just fly into the Lord. Hey, we're coming close. We just nicked over to the side. I mean, it's going to be higher than that iconic Christ the Redeemer statue that overlooks Rio de Janeiro. So it's underway. It's under construction. And they say late this year it will be there, and it's going to be a big celebration. And like I mentioned, I think planes are going to have to be forewarned to stay out of the way. All right, we have some great guests coming up on the show. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. Bullying, really incredible. He-Man canoeing. Wait till you meet our friend coming up later. And then, you know, a couple of other things that we're going to touch on along the way, too, including a conversation with Bruce Bastian about Vietnam and his point of view. So stay with us.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scented hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast. From Sunny Bay.
Do you have those well-meaning friends who tell you what you ought to be doing with your life? I'm Kate Delaney. I have them. Occasionally I listened and I found myself stuck in dead-end jobs, relationships, and a life I absolutely did not recognize. In my book, Deal Your Own Destiny, I promise you, once you finish it, you won't let people tell you what to do anymore. Learn how to make bold moves that change the course of your destiny. The book is filled with stories that will make you laugh out loud and lessons you can apply right away. If you go to my website, KateDelaneyRadio.com. I have a steal of a deal. Check this out. Just $29.99 for both my hard copy books. Deal Your Own Destiny, which I just talked about, and my girlfriend's gratitude journal. Perfect gift for girlfriends, wives, or any woman in your life. Again, both books, just $29.99. Click on special offer at KateDelaneyRadio.com.
Right now, Leslie Villard Zaffron is with us, along with Cinda Kane. The name of the book is called Fantastic Florence, It's Not Your Fault, A Story About Bullying. And this is a story that Leslie wrote. So, Leslie, let's bring you in first. Tell me about Fantastic Florence and the audience. What's the book about?
So this is a book about a little girl who's being bullied, and she feels pretty desperate. And fortunately, she has the help of Fantastic Florence, who is a wise and loving magical bag, who can hear her thoughts and who, in the end, writes her a message on herself as though she's a piece of paper, so that she can help Ella understand that it's not her fault. She is a wonderful human being and worthwhile, and validate her. And as we know, many children are bullied, so this was a topic that was very dear to me, and I was bullied myself, so it was pretty cathartic to write it.
So you write this children's book, and tell us about, before we go to Cinda, your relationship with Cinda. How did Cinda get involved? She's the dean of students in Broward County, at a school in Broward County, and she's also an English teacher. So tell me the road to that.
So it's amazing how things happen. Cinda and I crossed paths in a very unlikely way. We met because my husband saw her wearing a dress that was beautiful. And I stopped her and I said, "Where's that dress from?" And we started talking. And believe it or not, that's how we got to know one another. And we became friends. And I sent her this story. And she said, "You know, I have an idea for something that you could do with this story. Are you willing to be open to something a little different?" And I said, "Yes." And as Cinda will tell you, she has a dear friend who is a therapist who specializes in trauma. And it's amazing how one thing can lead to another.
Boy, no kidding. Fortuitous, as the listeners will hear, that you met Cinda. So, Cinda, tell me what your idea was and what you're doing with Fantastic Florence, It's Not Your Fault, A Story About Bullying.
Yes, good morning. So it started with my friend, her name's Tara Kellogg, and she is a renowned marriage and family therapist, but her specialty is in abused children and children who suffer from trauma. So as you know, in Broward County, we had that Parkland school shooting, and bullying is always an issue behind all of the problems with students, it seems. It's at the center, and it's something that needs to be addressed. So we've been thinking about writing therapeutic books. So when I read Leslie's character, Florence, I thought, wouldn't Florence be a great character to get the message across to children about the dangers of bullying and how they feel isolated and alone and how they can reach out and talk to people? Because, you know, sometimes they don't want to confide in their parents. Sometimes there are adults that they're not, they don't feel safe with. So, you know, at least with Florence, it was a tangible, comforting, sort of like a friend that would help them look at all these feelings of it's my fault, this happened, and how can I help?
Wonderful. And I go back to Leslie, and Leslie, who could imagine, you know, you create this character and where it can go through Cinda and Tara and other people as well. Tell us more about the story of Fantastic Florence. You told us a little bit, but tell us a little bit more.
So I think what's important is that the listeners know that Florence has this ability to feel empathy, that she has this ability to get into the hearts and minds of children. And since we're going to be, we already have written a number of other books on different topics, she has this ability to make children feel valued. And Ella feels that all these names, these children call her, that maybe she deserves them. That, and she wonders, did she do something to make them so mean to her? She can't understand. And one of the important things that Florence does is she always gives a name to whatever is happening. So she calls it bullying. And in other books that we've, you know, put out, there are books about abandonment and neglect where these names are mentioned. But more than that, she also lets Ella know that these children need to learn to stop being bullied. It's very important that they realize that there's no excuse for this, that they need help, they need support, and Florence is going to offer that. So it's all the stories are really engaging stories. They're stories where the children will enjoy reading them, but at the same time, they can help and offer solace.
Yeah, wonderful. And you can get this book on Amazon, of course, and all these future books, too, as well. And, Cinda, as you listen to Leslie, and, of course, you know her well in talking about where this will all go, does it get you excited to realize that this can be a great bridge for what's happening in your county and even other counties with kids?
Yes, absolutely. Especially considering that this has been a way to have a conversation, right? So when Florence writes her message, her personalized message to Ella, and Ella reads it, and then she, you know, feels empowered to seek help and maybe speak to her parents or someone she trusts after that, that yes, I mean, it's definitely an avenue where kids learn that it's not their fault, and there are ways and people to reach out to and resources, because especially today we know that social-emotional learning is number one, especially through this pandemic, of ways to help children.
Yeah. Leslie, did you ever imagine that your book would go in this direction? I mean, it's gotten even bigger.
So it's, you know, there was a movie a long time ago called Sliding Doors, and I think of that movie a lot because it's a movie about what happens if you go in one direction or you go in another direction. And actually, I thought about being a children's therapist for quite a while. And so being able to write books about children who are struggling and find ways to comfort them and give them a plan, something they can do, because that's another thing that happens in this story, is Florence actually makes suggestions to her about what she can do next time those children approach her. That's pretty incredible. So I consider it such a blessing that Cinda and Tara have come into my life and that I have this opportunity.
Yeah, well, we can't wait to see where it goes. Again, right now you can certainly go to Amazon and get, as I said now several times, or where great books are sold, Fantastic Florence, It's Not Your Fault, a story about bullying, very empowering and inspiring. Leslie and Cinda, thank you both very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Kate.
Wow, so important to stomp out bullying. I can't say enough about that. We have a couple of minutes left in this segment, and we don't have a man cave, so I wanted to hit up some big sports notes. First of all, hats off to Lindsay Jacob Ellis, the fact that she won her, you know, won the team's first USA gold medal at the Beijing Games. She looked just wonderful, and it was great to see that in the women's snowboard cross, the big, big final on Wednesday. After all these near misses at previous games, the 36-year-old topped the podium, her fifth Winter Olympics. I love it. I mean, she's been doing this, and we've actually talked to her on this show. She's been doing this for 16-plus years, and since she was a kid, really. So fantastic. What a great way to go gold. Woohoo! So excited about that. And then hats off to Shaun White, because, boy, oh, boy, it looked like, is he going to make it? Is he going to qualify? And certainly he did do that, and that's also super good news when we're hoping that the U.S. will start to get more medals. It's been a very strange Olympic Games for the U.S. You know, you just kind of take it for granted. We have incredible athletes and they're incredible competitors, and we win, win, win. We're used to winning and leading the leaderboard when it comes to the medal count. We'll see what happens when it's all said and done, because there's still many more events that'll take place. I think the Shiffrin debacle, and I feel so badly for her on skis, missing two events, not qualifying, was a big, big lost opportunity for the United States. But I think she's going to bounce back, and I would love to see her win a gold medal in one of the upcoming events in alpine skiing. This weekend is all about the Super Bowl. We know that. I'm in Iowa, and I just have been tooling around kind of in Des Moines, and I've talked to a couple of people. You know, you just pick up these conversations. I was having coffee, and somehow somebody started talking to me, asked me what I thought about, you know, just an off-the-cuff conversation, what I thought about the Super Bowl. And as many of you know who listen avidly to the show anyway, I picked the Bengals to win it. Most of the people I know are going with the Rams, and they're a four-point favorite, but I like the magic of Joe Burrow. I can't say enough about this kid. And listen, I really like a lot of the Rams. I do. But I have to go with what I think is going to happen. And I think it's going to be close. And I think the kicker is going to make the difference. I think McPherson is going to be the Iceman once again when he has to be. And he's going to come up with something big that they need. And that's going to be the big difference. All right, hang with us. A couple of really great guests coming up. We're going to take you canoeing. And then Bruce Bastian about the Vietnam War. His take is really, really interesting. See you on the flip side.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is considering updating its guidelines on the metrics states should use when considering lifting public health measures like mask mandates. Politico reported that CDC staff are weighing whether the agency should use case rates as a metric or whether it should lean more heavily on hospitalization data. A trucker convoy protesting vaccine mandates in Canada that shut down the capital city of Ottawa could be coming to the U.S. starting Super Bowl Sunday. This according to the Department of Homeland Security. Truckers said they won't leave until all vaccine mandates and COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. A handful of Canadian provinces have already lifted their mandates. And South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem says she's focused on her reelection bid, not the White House in 2024. You're listening to USA Radio News. The White House has announced a program for vets to land well-paying jobs and help with the supply chain crisis.
The White House is working on the supply chain crisis by getting veterans into the trucking industry.
A key element of this plan is encouraging the trucking industry to recruit and retain well-trained drivers by creating a safe, welcoming, and stable career path with good-paying jobs and family-sustaining wages. We can think of few Americans better prepared to take on this challenge than our nation's veterans.
White House spokesperson Jen Psaki from the White House Lectern. From the West Coast USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
A trucker convoy protesting vaccine mandates in Canada that shut down the capital city of Ottawa could be coming to the U.S. starting Super Bowl Sunday. This according to the Department of Homeland Security. Truckers said they won't leave until all vaccine mandates and COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. A handful of Canadian provinces have already lifted their mandates. This is USA Radio News.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Go to GCNteam.com or call 855-GCN-MALL. That's 855-426-6255. GCNteam.com or 855-426-6255. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
Never done it. Wait till you see who we're going to introduce you to here on these airways. Fred Nelson has written a book called The Thiawaiza Seal Rivers, Challenge of the Ice. But listen to some of these details about what he's done in his lifetime. He's been on 19 wilderness canoe trips. He's traveled a total of a little over 4,500 miles on the trips. Each trip lasted from 11 to 36 days. Wow. And this book is all about that adventure and, of course, his love for what he was able to do in a canoe. Hey, Fred, thank you for coming on.
You're more than welcome.
Let's talk about this canoe trip specifically. To give people an idea of what it's like, of the seriously, the ice you encountered, I mean, how many miles, how dangerous was it? What was this like in planning this, and then what happened when you actually started to go on the trip?
Well, our planning was a 450-mile trip down the Thiawaiza River to the Hudson Bay and then north to Eskimo Point. We didn't anticipate any ice. We were going to leave on the 19th of June and expected no snow or ice at all. But when we got up to Lynn Lake, where we flew out of, we found that most rivers were closed because it was the coldest winter in 40 years.
And, you know, it's interesting. There was five canoeists plus yourself that planned this 450-mile trip. And, you know, you're talking about Snyder Lake in northwest Manitoba to the Hudson Bay, like you said, and then north to the village of Eskimo Point on the west side of Hudson Bay. And you look at this, and you have to fly from the village of Lynn Lake to Manitoba to Snyder Lake to start this whole thing. And even the bush pilot was apprehensive, right, about the rivers and what was frozen and how it was like the coldest winter in 40 years. Because we're talking about July, like you said, of 1969.
Well, the bush pilot thought that the river was flowing, but agreed that he would drop us off on Seal River if it was frozen. But when we got up there, we could see that the river was flowing, so we continued to go down the river. We didn't think that maybe the lakes would be frozen. So 6 days into the trip, we got to Newton Lake and found that 85 miles of it was covered with ice.
So what do you do when you find that it's covered with ice?
Well, we discussed our options, and the only option that made much sense was to go cross-country utilizing little streams and ponds and go over to the Seal River, which we knew was flowing, and continue the trip down the Seal River and then down south to Churchill. So that's what we did. We were anticipating a 9-mile portage in doing this, where there was no little streams or creeks or anything to pull the canoes across. But we were able to stop the 9-mile portage because of the ice. We were able to drag the canoes over, but 9-mile portage means 27 miles of walking. You know, you take the canoe over with your 75-pound packs, then walk the 9 miles back to get the remaining packs, and then walk the 9 miles again with 75 packs plus paddles and other loose items.
Sounds exhausting. Absolutely. But what did you see on this journey? I mean, what kind of wildlife? What was it like? What was that moment like for you?
Well, there wasn't an awful lot of wildlife yet, but we did encounter a bear, a grizzly bear that had killed a black bear. And we went to investigate. Found the black bear was still warm, so immediately jumped in our canoes and took off. And then the grizzly bear came down to the water's edge, and we just canoed and hoped that he wouldn't follow us.
Oh, wow. And luckily he didn't follow you, right? You just could kind of watch him on the sidelines.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that is crazy.
We captured a polar bear a little later. We went down the Seal River and got on Hudson Bay. And because the difference in high tide to low tide is 5 miles of mud flat, so we planned to just paddle an hour before high tide and an hour after high tide and then camp out until we got another high tide. But a polar bear wouldn't let us come to shore, so we spent a whole night in Hudson Bay in a storm. It was quite exhausting.
Yeah, I bet it was. What got you interested in canoeing in the first place? What got you interested in doing these kinds of adventures? And obviously you've loved it and you've lived it, it sounds like, your entire life.
Well, I do love the water. I lived on the Atlantic coast on Long Island for a number of years in my younger life years. And I was a crewman in college, road crew. And so when someone asked me to go on a canoe trip, I I was hesitant, but I went, and we tipped over three times, and I just fell in love with this sport. I decided I had to learn this sport.
And for people listening who are interested in canoeing, what are the kinds of things that you would suggest they start off with? Because I know there's going to be people that are listening to this, and they're not going to be able to take the adventures you did, especially not in the beginning. But what would you suggest they do? What kind of canoe? What should we look for?
Well, we for several years used a 15-foot canoe, but you couldn't get enough equipment in that 15-footer. So we went to a 17-foot canoe, which is also, we settled on that. That's the kind of the maximum weight that you want to carry. Anything bigger would be exhausting. And I would highly recommend, if you plan any trips like these, is take several courses of beginner's canoeing on up through advanced canoeing, whitewater canoeing courses. You have to be expert in canoeing in order to take these wilderness canoe trips. Because realize that you're anywhere from 200 to 500 miles from any civilization whatsoever.
Ooh, yeah, so you get into trouble, you have to be able to maneuver your way out of it.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. This obviously was a huge, huge adventure. Was this the best of all the adventures that you took?
Well, as an adventure, it was certainly the best. It had a lot of life-threatening decisions that we had to make along the way, and fortunately, everyone on the trip was quite experienced, including my 17-year-old son. And so we were able to handle all the problems that arose. But it was the most adventure-type trip. I've had other trips that were wonderful in terms of the scenery and the river rapids and what have you, like the South Nahanni, which is my second favorite trip.
The South Nahanni, where's that?
It's just west of the Great Slave Lake, and it flows down to the Yukon River and then on into the Great Slave Lake.
Wow.
It's a very popular river. There's several hundred people do that a year.
Yeah, I bet. So what do you want people to take away from reading your book, The Thea Wise of Seal River's Challenge of the Ice, from reading it?
Well, it's a great book for somebody who likes to read about early explorers, adventurers, people who do the non-daily kinds of things. They like the extremes of adventure. But this is a book that you can read in the warmth and comfort of your home and not worry about the black flies, the cold, the ice, the rapids, waterfall, things of that nature. You can just read about it and enjoy it.
I like that. You can just stay warm and dry. Fred Nelson, it was great speaking with you. The book again, The Thea Wise Seal River's Challenge of the Ice, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, wherever great books are sold, you can get this. Fred, thank you.
You're more than welcome. I always enjoy talking about my trips.
My name is Milan Vukovic. 10 years ago, I got frustrated with the quality of Pau D'Arco tea sold in the stores. So, I founded the Pau D'Arco Tea Club that now ships our super tea to over 100 countries. You too can order or get info about the original Pure Palo de Arco Super Tea at www.drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. Why settle for less when you can order original Pure Palo de Arco and drink Super Tea for only $34.95 per pound plus shipping? Each pound makes 300 cups, which is the equivalent of 12 cents per cup for the original Pure Palo de Arco Super Tea. Order now at www.drinksupertea.com. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com or by calling 818-965-9113.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
If you're like most Americans, you're pretty much in disbelief with what's going on in the world. As we all know, global problems are having local consequences. Too many of them. And if the peanut butter really hits the fan, are you ready? Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Now's the time to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. Our food kits will ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Having food storage in your home beats government food lines hands down. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today and prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Bruce Bastian joins us. He's written a book called 13 Months in the Bush in Vietnam in 1968. And Bruce, first, thanks for your service. You and I had a wonderful off-air conversation. I think your book takes us on a really interesting journey and one that you don't hear much about. And some of that is the funny stuff, the camaraderie, what it was really like to be in the middle of this situation that you found yourself in and day out. So thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks, Kate, for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
So let's talk about what happened. So how did you end up in the situation where you went to Vietnam, and then what was that like initially in the first beginning moments of it when you first were deployed?
Well, initially I was in college and not having any goals or reason for being there, and I wasn't doing very well. And I joined the Marine Corps simply so I could find a purpose. And so they, at that time, of course, they were looking for people to be in the infantry, and that's what where I ended up. Going over to Vietnam, even though we'd heard quite a bit about it and thought we knew something about it, it was quite a shock. It wasn't anything like we had really thought. And when real world gets in the way, you can be surprised quite a bit.
And what happened is, speaking of real world, I mean, you had people of all kinds of different backgrounds, and you're a kid, and all different kinds of races and everything you can imagine in this environment, but yet you felt that strong sense of incredible camaraderie, didn't you?
Well, I did, and I think all of us did, actually. Anytime you go through something, some kind of experience, office with a bunch of people and you're sharing the load of what's there, you grow together and you begin to support each other and you become friends. And it doesn't matter where you started out. Once you're there, you're all together and you're going through the same thing, sharing the same problems or the same dangers. And you can't help but begin to have friends and close friends.
And your job every day and the guys that you're with is really right to kill the bad guys.
Well, that was the purpose. We were there for one purpose, and that was to win the war. I can talk about that later on because that it didn't turn out that they had any plan to do that. But anyway, that'll be later.
Okay, so one of the things that you said to me is, you know, of course we know, like you said, there were things that were ugly and horrific and violent and all that kind of stuff. Of course, we know that. But you say that there was a lot of fun and funny things that happened with these friendships and that you had a lot of tediousness. And what did you do when, you know, you were bored? So tell us some of the fun stuff.
Well, you have to remember when we talk about what's funny now today, in hindsight, looking back, at the time, it wasn't particularly funny. In fact, it could have been fairly dangerous. It could have been fairly scary. And I have one of my favorite stories is what happened at a place called Wang Ko. There was a hill that we were on, stationed above that, and the idea was to run our patrols down the hill and down, protect the bridges along the Highway 1. And it turned out that a friend of mine, Jenkins, and I were stationed at the very entrance to the top of the hill, where if the bad guys were going to come up and get us, they had to go through us first. And we were the only ones there at the edge of the jungle where it went down the hill. And so it was just Jenkins and I. We had to alternate watches. And he was sitting out in front on his watch, and I was in the poncho tent trying to get some sleep. And I heard him suddenly say, "Bastion, come out here, please." And I thought, he sounds scared. I better go out and look and see what's going on. And when I went out there, I looked, and he was pointing at this, up into the sky, at this orange glowing parachute that seemed to be jumping around the sky and scared the heck out of us. We didn't know what that was. And so he said, "I'm going to shoot that son of a gun." And he fired off a few rounds right into it, and looked. I saw the tracers. It looked like he hit it. So I told him he got it. But nothing happened. He just stood there. It just sat there jumping around in the sky, and we didn't know what it was going to do. And we're thinking about that. And, of course, when he shot off the rounds, that disturbed some people on the other side of the hill, and we could hear them coming to see what was going on. And while we were waiting for them to get to us, we noticed that the clouds in the sky were breaking apart, and it was showing a lot more night, open sky. And at the same time, the moon had risen over the mountains out in the horizon there. And what we had actually shot at was the top half of the moon that was just coming up over the mountains. And I thought, yeah, I did it. So Jenkins was really relieved at knowing what his dangerous foe was. And so he was beginning to relax just a little bit. But in the meantime, the guys came around from the side of the hill, and they wanted to know what was going on. And I didn't want to tell them that Jenkins had shot at the moon. That would be stupid. So I told them that Jenkins heard something. And the lieutenant got really mad at us, and he said, "Don't you know that if you hear something, you throw a grenade at it rather than shooting at it, because otherwise they're going to know where you're at." And the funny part is now Jenkins is so now relieved that he knew what he was shooting at that he blurted out, "Well, yep, now the moon know where I'm at." So in hindsight, it's pretty funny, but at the time, it was fairly scary.
Yeah, oh, I bet it was. And you know, and you think about, like, where did you sleep? What did you eat? What about some of these battles? And you talk about that in your book.
Well, I do. I try to cover just about everything we did, where we lived, little poncho tents, and where we slept, and what we ate, and the good things that happened to us, and just the mundane bad things about getting diarrhea or getting plugged up or what you would do about those things. And so it wasn't all bad blood and guts and gore and fighting. You're there for 13 months. Lots of things happen, just like they would in normal life.
Yeah, and when you look back on this, like you say, things just happen like in normal life. But what else do you want the reader to know when they think about getting into this war and what happened and all of that? What, how do you sum that up?
Well, one of the reasons I wrote it, there were several different reasons, of course, but I wanted to explain that the military and our government went from, at least in our view, from being the good guy and trying to be protectors of freedom and democracy, to becoming, it became an unending, disastrous quest for the power and the money and the control. And in hindsight, I happen to think that it continues to this day. But when we began that, it was considered the military and the government were considered the good guys, and they were trying to protect us. And it turns out they didn't have a plan. They didn't know what they were doing. We didn't do anything that was worthwhile over there. The guys over there did what was required of them, and they did it in exceptional manner. But we didn't keep a hill. If we took the hill, we didn't keep a village. If we kept the village, or if we took the village, and there was no rhyme or reason for being there. We weren't accomplishing anything. And that was one of the things I point out in the last part of the book.
Yeah, which again is what's so interesting about your book. You take us through some fun times, what was tough, and then ultimately, you know, what was the quest when you were there. What do you hope people take away from reading your book?
Well, I'd like people to realize there was a balance to the being there. I mean, I think the public has an image that it was a skewed image that says it was nothing but blood and guts and gore and fighting and terrible situation. And of course it was that at certain times, but you're there a whole year. You can't possibly be there a whole year without having your normal activities going on, your normal friendships, the fun times, the good times. So that was one thing. And then I really wanted to point out that the role of happenstance in being there, you know, deciding who gets killed or who gets wounded or who becomes sick or who has to be medevaced out of there or who, like me, happened to skate through with no problems whatsoever, it's just a matter of happenstance. There's the role of luck and chance, and it doesn't have anything to do with what you learn in class or how fast you can duck and cover. It's just a matter of luck. And you either get it or you don't.
Perfect place to end this. Get this book, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, 13 Months in the Bush in Vietnam, 1968. Bruce Bastian, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed it.
The Tahibo Tea Club's original pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea naturally builds good cells and kills bad cells. So, it's great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting an infection, diabetes, or cancer. To order, visit drinksupertea.com or call 818-965-9113. That's drinksupertea.com. 818-965-9113. drinksupertea.com.
Ever feel completely down on your luck, whether it's your career or just your life? Do you look at other people and wonder, why them, not me? I'm Kate Delaney. I did it. I admit it. I've learned some valuable and priceless lessons from some of the rock stars I've interviewed over the years, like Sir Richard Branson or the late, great John Madden, and I want to share them. Want to laugh? Want to learn? Want more out of life? Then pick up a copy of my book, Heal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. Get it on Amazon today.